There are some pairings in life that don't tend to go together too well, like oil and water, like fire and ice, think dog and cat, or toast and Marmite. Some of us may think to add another pairing to that list: sex and church. Certainly a perception is that the two don't work well together. And there have been times in its history when church and sex have seemed to be mutually incompatible. Clement of Alexandria attempted a clampdown on sexual activity by teaching that sex, for any purpose other than producing children, was a violation of nature. His contemporary, Tertullian, favored a complete prohibition: sex, marriage, and procreation having no place in the life of a Christian man or woman. Antony of Egypt fled into the desert to be free of every pull of the world, including sexual lust, only for the devil himself to appear before him in the guise of a naked temptress who had to be prayed and prayed and prayed away. But full marks must go to another teacher called Origen, who, wanting to avoid any hint of sexual scandal around his private tuition of women, allegedly castrated himself. Problem solved. Or not. These are extreme measures. Yet surely in keeping with Jesus' own extremist talk about the place and practice of sex. Jesus says here in our passage, "If your eye causes you to stumble, gouge it out and throw it away. If your right hand causes you to stumble, cut it off and throw it away." Isn't Jesus simply giving license to the eccentric attitude of Clement or Tertullian, or the even more eccentric behavior of Antony and Origen? It would seem that way. Moreover, many may think that Jesus' teaching represents a wholly negative, even oppressive attitude towards sex. Just the kind of extremist talk that has no place in a sexually liberated society. Today, anyone who takes a strong, clear, impassioned stance on anything, those views are quickly labeled as extreme, and that person branded an extremist. The assumption is, if you go to the extreme on anything, that is always an inherently bad thing. Well, to be an extremist when it comes to violence and hate, without a doubt, that is a bad thing. But as for someone who is, say, extremely generous or extremely forgiving, surely there can be no law against these. There are some things in life about which it would be simply inappropriate to settle for some cozy middle, too important for us to remain lukewarm. So, hold your fire. Hear what Jesus has to say about the place and practice of sex. It may well cut against what you've heard even some of his most devoted followers say, and against what you've wrongly assumed he said. At the beginning of Matthew chapter 5, we read that Jesus has sat down on a mountainside in Galilee to teach. Around him have gathered both his disciples and a wider crowd. That is, both his followers who are eager to learn and those who are merely curious as to what he will say. It's very public. Jesus is teaching this mixed gathering with both his hearers in mind. His concern is to spell out how it is that his disciples are to live in every area of life the distinctive people he wants them to be in and for the world. There's an authority with which Jesus teaches. For both the disciple and the curious, the insider and the outsider, if you like, both are being encouraged to look again at their lives. You have heard that it was said, but I tell you, is Jesus' repeated refrain. Every area that Jesus chooses to address is being cast in a new light and presented with a fresh challenge, not least this whole area of sex. Now, as Jesus begins to teach on adultery and lust here in verse 27, his sexual ethic is counter the culture, a revolution. And it is no less counter the culture of those his first hearers than it is to us listening here today. It was always going to sound alien because the call wrapped up in it is the call to a wholly new way of being human. These, then, truly are fighting words that come from Jesus' mouth. If your eye, gouge it out. If your hand, cut it off. But what exactly is Jesus' fight? That we've got to get clear on if we're ever to make that fight our own. Two questions. What is Jesus fighting for? And what is Jesus fighting against? What is Jesus fighting for? And what is Jesus fighting against? Let's look at each of these questions in turn. First, what is Jesus fighting for? Verse 27. You have heard that it was said, you shall not commit adultery. But I tell you that anyone who looks at a woman lustfully has already committed adultery with her in his heart. You shall not commit adultery is the seventh of 10 commandments given by the Lord to the people of Israel, and through them, given to the people of God in every age to live out their distinctive calling. Now, we may think that anything as formal as a set of commandments can only serve to kill all the fun and suck the enjoyment out of life. But we'd be wrong. Take this seventh commandment. It says, do not have sex outside the bond of marriage. Why not? Is it to deprive us of something good and beautiful? No. Instead, it is to preserve us for a greater good, something more beautiful. Don't go pouring yourself out over there when there's something better to give your life to over here. And that is marriage. Jesus has a very low view of adultery precisely because he is captivated by a much higher view of marriage. If you were to hold up the two, adultery and marriage, there is no comparison. The picture given to us in the Bible of marriage is of the husband freely giving his life over to and for his wife. Completely, not reservedly. Permanently, not temporarily. Exclusively, not inclusively. Unconditionally, not conditionally. Freely giving over his life, even unto death. Sex is an outward display of that rich commitment. In sex, you are doing with your body that which you have already committed to doing with the whole of the rest of your life. Giving it away for the benefit of your spouse. More than that, sex creates and nurtures and strengthens and secures and even heals this unique relationship between a man and a woman. Jesus is fighting for marriage as the context in which sex truly comes alive to be all that it is meant to be. Still, why privilege marriage as the sole context for sex to find expression? There's got to be more than a pragmatic reason for it. And there is. It's this. Marriage isn't just a good idea. It's the big idea. So it is that within the Bible narrative, history begins with a marriage and history ends in a marriage. Marriage is given to us as the primary picture, the key visual aid by which we are to understand the relationship between God and the people he is calling to be his very own. When the Apostle Paul draws to a close all he has to say about the marriage between a husband and a wife, he makes a startling comment. Whatever else you might think I've been talking about, I am talking about Christ and the church. However imperfectly, the marriage relationship still accurately pictures the complete, permanent, exclusive, unconditional love of Jesus for his bride, the church, even unto death. It's this rich picture that is to continue to shape and direct and give content to that most intimate relationship between a man and a woman. It's this picture that Jesus fights for, one that he wants us to fight for alongside him, so that this is the picture we paint with our lives. Adultery. Sex outside the bond of marriage, sex that may mean breaking the bond of marriage, doesn't just happen. It is too proactive and too intimate a thing for it to simply be the result of a lax moment. Adultery, where does it begin? It begins, says Jesus, with lust. Verse 28. I tell you that anyone who looks at a woman lustfully has already committed adultery with her in his heart. It's been said that lust is every man's problem. The only thing I'd add is that lust is also every woman's problem. Now, that doesn't mean we're all battling some insatiable fire that is ripping through our lives. Lust, at the outset, is often more innocuous than that. It can begin, as Jesus says, with something as innocent as a look. It isn't uncommon for someone to catch our eye who is, to our estimation at least, beautiful or handsome. Are we right to note that? Certainly. Compliments given where compliments are due. But sometimes that look may linger just a little too long. Even as the person has passed us by, we may hold on to their image and soon find a whole host of unhelpful thoughts crowding around it in our mind. But that's miles from an opportunity for adultery, you might think. Not in Jesus' estimation. Lust left unchecked is a proactive investment towards adultery. Lust, once kindled, just like the spark of any fire, can cover a lot of ground and become all-consuming more quickly than we think. Friends, if you're in a relationship with someone not yet your husband or wife, be aware of how much time you're spending alone together. Here is a church family. One-to-one meetups are a big part of how we look to encourage one another. Do you find yourself meeting for coffee a little too often with someone of the opposite sex? If you're someone who makes use of social media, who do you spend a lot of time direct messaging? In such an artificial environment, it is so easy to find ourselves disclosing and conveying too much about ourselves, far more than we ever would face to face. We can quickly become too intimate. If you're someone who regularly travels away from London for work or on other excursions, who goes with you? Who will you be meeting when you arrive? Will you be spending a lot of time alone one-to-one. Away from family and friends, it will mean a lot more time one-to-one than when you're at home. In each of these contexts, the point is the same. If you're spending time with someone you like being around or find attractive, naturally, you're more relaxed. Too easily, our inhibitions are lowered, and we may find ourselves off guard. Be always in the fight, says Jesus. The fight is for marriage. This fight is the same for the single person as it is for the married person. That's because, like Jesus, we're all to be captivated by the very highest view of marriage, portrayed in all its beauty. And we're, each of us, already caught up in that greatest of all marriages, that between Christ and his church. And that brings us to our second question. Having seen what Jesus is fighting for, what is Jesus fighting against? Verse 29. If your right eye causes you to stumble, gouge it out and throw it away. If your right hand causes you to stumble, cut it off and throw it away. You may be wondering why it is that there aren't more people in church this morning wearing eye patches. Or not more people like Oregon, having castrated themselves. Well, those into self-mutilation probably wouldn't make very good marriage material. And marriage is the very thing Jesus is telling us to preserve ourselves for. But more importantly, how Jesus says what he says here makes it clear that he isn't advocating removal of body parts. Gouge out only your right eye, and you can still look lustfully at that woman with your perfectly good left one. Cut off your right hand, and quite likely you can continue on doing what you have been doing with your left hand. Jesus' mention of lust makes it clear that we need a far deeper incision than any surgeon's tool can provide. Why is it that Jesus says we are to be so uncompromising in avoiding adultery and dealing with lust? You will have noticed the answer there in verses 29 and 30. Gouge out your eye. Why? It is better for you to lose one part of your body than for your whole body to be thrown into hell. Cut off your hand again. Why? It is better for you to lose one part of your body than for your whole body to go into hell. Here's what Jesus is fighting for and why he is so uncompromising. Jesus is fighting against the claims and the pull of hell upon our lives. He wants us to join him in fighting that same claim, that same pull upon us. Lust, when it finds expression in our lives, doesn't often wear an ugly face. If it did, we'd quickly want rid of it. Most often, lust finds expression in the guise of something honorable, something beautiful, something that can't simply be written off as crude adultery. But take a closer look, and lust, when it does start to take hold, has many parallels with drunkenness and greed. With drunkenness, at first comes a pleasant intoxication and a loss of inhibitions. So with lust. With greed comes a desire to take more than to give, a desire to consume and discard. So with lust. These tendencies, given free rein, well, they don't make for a pretty picture. The man or woman who gives themselves to another reservedly, temporarily, conditionally, without exclusivity, This is sex being put to an end that it was never meant to have. It's more about taking than giving, and so isn't truly life-giving. Again, we can't settle for pragmatics. The picture painted by a life in which lustful tendencies are left unchecked, it certainly isn't a picture of the relationship between Christ and his church. If anything, it's that relationship turned on its head. An anti-gospel, lacking the riches of love and faithfulness that Jesus wants us to know. Lust, then, is a poisonous thing. It works deep down in our hearts, corrupting and desensitizing us so that we become more and more incapable of the love and faithfulness and commitment that the gospel espouses. Lust itself may not wear an ugly face, but very soon we start to wear one. In Jesus' teaching here, hell isn't just the final consequence of a lifetime of poor investment. Hell is the trajectory we set ourselves upon, even as we invest ourselves in adultery today. Hell is in us long, long before we find ourselves in it. The message is fight. It's always in his power, always by his strength, but our fight nonetheless. Back in the 5th century, a young man named Augustine knew well what it was to battle with lust, and for a long time he wasn't winning. He had become overly comfortable, overly at home, in an adulterous relationship with an older woman. At the time, young Augustine was beginning to show some leanings towards Christian things, but he felt powerless to act upon them. Such was the stronghold in this one area of his life. One day, in a garden, the Lord intervened. A voice told him to take up the Bible and read. Augustine did. And the first passage that fell open was Paul's letter to the Romans, chapter 13. And the first verses that his eyes alighted upon were these: let us behave decently, as in the daytime, not in carousing and drunkenness, not in sexual immorality and debauchery, not in dissension and jealousy. Rather, arm yourselves with the Lord Jesus Christ, and do not think about how to gratify the desires of the flesh. With these words, writes Augustine, it was as though the light of confidence flooded my heart, and all the darkness of doubt was dispelled. Lust and adultery could have destroyed him, but armed with the Lord, Augustine chose to make a break with the past and begin walking a different path. Had he not, then we would have been deprived of one of the very greatest thinkers in the Western world. Here in Matthew chapter 5, this is extreme talk coming from the lips of Jesus. Well, in fighting for something as precious as marriage, and in fighting against something so perilous as hell, such extremism is more than justified. Let's ensure that, like Augustine, we're with him in this fight. Amen.